Ladies and gentlemen, Chikarmi, Chikara fans, people out there that watch wrestling, welcome once again to another fun-filled, belly-filling edition of My Breakfast with Chikara. I am your host, PJ Drummond, and I am joined today by a man who has gained quite a bit of notoriety in the last year, and he is everyone's handicapped hero. That is Gregory Iron. Greg, how are you doing this evening?
I'm okay. You know, I just ate a Shamrock Shake from McDonald's a little bit ago, and I'm feeling quite good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. Are you a big fan of the Shamrock Shake? I've honestly, 100%, I've never had one ever.
You know what? Here's the thing. Every year, I don't care about St. Paddy's Day at all. So, like, every year after St. Paddy's Day, I realize that I've forgotten about the Shamrock Shake. So it's been so long since I actually had one that today I was like, you know what? I think St. Paddy's Day is coming up. I'm pretty sure I can go get a Shamrock Shake. And then I proceeded to do so. So this year I actually remembered and I enjoyed a Shamrock Shake. I'm a big fan of shakes. I probably should be watching my diet a little more, but, you know, whatever. It was delicious. I feel great.
So now what is it? Now it's minty, I'm assuming, just based on the color.
It's a tad minty. I would describe it more as scrum diddly umptious. Did I even say that right? I don't even know.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I'd say so. It's, I don't know. Well, let's see. Scrum diddly umptious. There's other good words like that. Is it supercalifragilisticexpialidocious?
That sounds about right. Yeah, okay. I like words with more than 10 syllables.
They come in very handy with Scrabble.
Yeah.
Yes. Scrabble is a board game. Like Words for Friends for all of you youngins out there that don't know how to play with things that don't have a screen.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm an old man at this point, so unfortunately I remember things like that. Sorry, I just cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, I'm just asking how old you are.
How old am I? I just turned 33. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's not that old. I get paranoid that being 25, like I am currently, is pretty old. But so you make me feel less bad about that.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Now, I found, honestly, when I turned 25, I don't know what it was about 25. That one felt very weird to me.
Yeah, it's an awkward stage in your life. It's like, it's not quite 30, but it's close. So mm-hmm. Now, like, you're inching away, like every time I talk to someone, they're always like, oh, you're 25, you're pretty much 30. And that's not how that works. Like, I don't know if you just round that up to 30. Like, it makes me feel like my life's almost over. Like, 25, that's halfway to 50.
Right.
And then, like, once you get to 50, like, you might as well just give up. Like, life's over.
Exactly. Just crawl under the porch and
right.
It's all done. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think same thing. 25, my 20s were half over. I should start considering becoming more of an adult, but I wasn't quite ready to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was weird. And then 30, my 30th birthday was probably one of the most miserable experiences ever. I had just moved to Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
I was alone. There had been a massive ice storm. There was no power in my apartment. And I was sitting alone eating a Papa John's pizza.
Oh, wow. That's like that's like rock bottom, man. I mean, to me, that kind of doesn't sound that bad. But, I mean, to the outside world, I guess that would be rock bottom. I don't mind spending time alone.
Sure.
But it's almost like when I do have some quiet time finally, it's like a couple hours go by and I'm like, you know what? I wish I was hanging out with someone. It does get kind of lonesome at times, but I've always been more of a lone wolf, you could say. I just like spending time by myself. And I have like an active imagination. It's almost like, you know, we're talking about, you know, what age you have to figure out that, hey, it's about time to grow up. It's like, it's almost like I'm regressing in adulthood. I don't know. Like I sit up in my room a lot playing Super Nintendo, like a small child. I just bought Tiny Adventures for my Super Nintendo. And I'm like, I was playing that yesterday. I don't know. I'm not an adult at all.
No, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I recently went to one of the most magical places on earth that I just found out about here in Chicago. There's an arcade here. It's called the Galloping Ghost Arcade, and they have, it's just full of a great mix of like old school video games and sort of newer ones. And basically you walk in, you pay $15, and you can stay there and play for as long as you want.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. It seems like a place I'd have to visit. I'm actually going to Chicago this weekend, so I mean, I'll have to keep that in mind.
Absolutely, yeah. It is a magical place. And yeah, I was there for about 4 hours, and the time just kind of flew by. I found myself the game I played the most was Burger Time.
Yeah, that's an awesome game, man.
I was surprised how like into it I got. It was very, very cool.
Yeah, so. it's like you know, with video games and you know, wrestling, and I'm just not a grown man at all. I guess I'm more of a simple guy. You know, I like video games. I like hanging out with a small group of friends, going to thrift stores. I guess that means I'm also a poor guy. But the thing about thrift stores is, it's like, you know, even if I were to get signed to a major wrestling contract or win the lottery or something, it's like, I would still go to thrift stores, because it's like, if you have a lot of money, you could just go into a store and buy whatever you want. But going into a thrift store, it's like, you never know what you're going to find, mm-hmm. and you don't know if you're going to have money to afford it, but chances are you will, because of the thrift store. But it's like, it's almost like you're finding like a lost treasure. It's pretty awesome going to thrift stores. Or maybe I'm just a weirdo.
No, I mean, you're a man that appreciates history, is what I would say.
Exactly.
You know, that brand new pair of jeans, you know, hanging up in a store at $240 doesn't have history, yeah. But you pick yourself up a nice pair of Bugle Boys or Jordache at the thrift store and you're good to go.
Yeah. I just bought a pair of Chucks, high top Chucks, for $299. Where else can you get a deal like that?
Perfect.
I don't know. You know where you can find a deal like that? You tell me.
at the risk of horrendous stereotyping, but I know he has mentioned this before, I do believe possibly your friendship with Cole Cabana has rubbed off on you slightly.
It might have. Cole Cabana is also a very simple guy.
He's a thrifty man.
Before, you know, we became friends in wrestling, he's someone I always looked up to as a wrestler, and you know, I've actually spent an evening over his house. He is a simple dude, and I can appreciate the heck out of that, because I'm a simple man myself.
Nice. Back on the video game topic real quick, I'm curious. Now, you mentioned playing Super Nintendo. Are you a Nintendo, that's it, that's all I'm doing, or are you open to all of the other systems?
You know, I'm open up to other things. You know, as a kid, you know, I was real into Nintendo, Super Nintendo, you know, Sega Genesis, all that simple stuff. And you know, it was always back and forth on those things, because, you know, my mom, not to bring the tone down of the interview right now, but like, you know, she's heavily into drugs. I think that's kind of documented. And with that drug habit, one of her favorite things to sell on a regular basis was mine and my brother's video game system. So, you know, there'd be a week where we'd have a Super Nintendo and it'd be gone. And then a month later, you know, she would come into some money and she would buy us like a Sega. And then that would be there for 3 weeks, and she would sell that. And because, you know, it would always just magically disappear. So I kind of just got used to playing all the other different systems, Nintendo 64, PlayStation. Once you get up to around the Xbox and PlayStation 2, it gets kind of difficult for me, because with having cerebral palsy, with the disability in my hand, it's like they started making all the games where they had two joysticks, where you had to like look a direction with one joystick and move with the other. I can't handle that. You know, it was real simple to press my thumb with my right hand on the Nintendo and the Sega. Once you try to get all advanced like that, it really ruins the video game for the disabled people. So I try to stay old school, nothing above really PlayStation 2, Grand Theft Auto. I mean, maybe if I could play it on like Xbox occasionally, but it's real difficult with a two joystick.
Sure, I could definitely see that. Definitely. Now, I want to go in like six different directions right now, just based on what you said. I'm going to go with the first one real quick. Are you like a platform gamer, an action gamer? Do you like role playing games? Is like, where do you stand in that issue?
I am a big side scrolling beat 'em up fan. I enjoy games like that. I off the top of my head, one of my, you know, all time personal favorites is, I believe it is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, the arcade one that they came out with Nintendo. I mean, that was always fun. You just walk around, beat the crap out of people. I just recently, for the longest time, I couldn't remember one of my favorites as a kid. Me and my brother used to rent it all the time from the video store down the street. It had a blue cop and some random guy in a jacket. For the longest time, I rented it all the time when I couldn't remember the name of it. Doing some research, when I saw the video game cover, it like struck a chord in my brain somewhere and was like, oh my God, I think that's the game. I don't know if you remember this. It was called Rival Turf. It had probably... If you've ever seen the cover art, it's like the dumbest cover art for a video game ever. Mm-hmm. It's like some little gangster-looking kid who doesn't look intimidating at all,
yep.
and some like wannabe gangster white kid on the front, and it doesn't look like a game you want to buy, but you play it, and it's the most awesome game ever. You just walk around beating the crap out of people, and I just recently rediscovered it, and I played it, and I beat it in one day. So it really wasn't that challenging, but heck of a fun game.
Definitely. Yeah. Now, I mean, being in the pro wrestling business and enjoying games of that ilk, I'm sure you based much of your career off of the fighting style of Mike Hagar from Final Fight.
Well, of course. Why wouldn't I? Whoever gets into this business and doesn't have that type of fighting style is really on the ball.
Absolutely. That was one of the games at the Galloping Ghost that I played quite a bit. And, of course, I selected Mike Hagar, because why would I not want to be jump pile driving people into concrete and things like that?
I'm waiting for someone to get signed and go to FCW and name themselves Mike Hagar.
That would be pretty awesome.
That's my FCW name now.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. The other avenue I wanted to go down, because, and I say this not because I don't diligently look for every interview you've done, but you know what you mentioned about with your mom and things like that, is that still an ongoing issue?
No. Well, I don't know if you know.
I don't. Unfortunately, I don't. I profess my ignorance on this whole topic. Yeah.
Her drug obsession, began before I was even born, but it got a lot deeper when her mom died, who would have been my grandma when I was mm-hmm. 8 years old. She's actually my grandma's the one who got me into wrestling, and she passed away of bone cancer when I was 8. So when she kind of died, my mom used that as an excuse to get into heavier drugs like crack and cocaine and stuff like that. So that's kind of what led to her selling stuff, not just from my brothers, but her friends, her family, my dad. My dad had to sleep with his jeans on, with his wallet in his pocket, so she wouldn't take money.
Wow.
It got kind of brutal. So, we had child service in our life, and we almost got put up for adoption at one point. She lied about my dad being an alcoholic and stuff, so he had to go through rehab and stuff to kind of get custody of us. Mm-hmm. And ever since 1998, when I was about 12 years old, I pretty much lived with my dad until I turned 18. So things got better. My mom kind of drifted in and out of my life. And it sucked because, she started appearing at my wrestling matches when I first started in 2006. And she kind of found out because the story basically is I was driving to the training center where I was learning to train in Cleveland, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't seen my mom in about a year or two. And it's so weird even telling people this, because if I wasn't me, this would seem like a pretty messed up story. But to me, it's like normal. I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. I'm driving down the street, hadn't seen my mom in a year or two. I look to my left, and there's my mom looking like a bum and carrying a bag of something. And we made eye contact. And I'm driving to the training center, and I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm pretty sure that was just my mom. And in my brain, I'm thinking, do I go back and pick her and see how she is, or do I keep going? And I ended up turning around and going back, and she started crying, and she jumps in my car, and I said, do you need a ride somewhere? And she tells me she's cleaned up her life, which she had done several times.
Sure.
And I ended up driving her to a guy's house named Snowman. She told me the guy's name was Snowman. So I'm not a big I've never done drugs. I'm not into anything like that. But I'm pretty sure Snowman is some sort of nickname for like a drug user, you know? So
sure.
It's one of those things where I just kind of shook my head at. And she found out I was wrestling, so she would show up to wrestling shows. And when you see her in the background of some of my very first matches, she would be all happy when I was beating up my opponent. And then as soon as I would get slammed or hit or something, you know, you would see some sadness in her eyes. And that sticks out to me. And I was dubbing these old tapes of mine not too long ago and putting them on DVD and watching this. This was right after about a year ago when I found out she passed away. She actually died of a drug overdose. She had been living in a homeless shelter for, I think it was about a month. Mm-hmm. My grandpa, who always tried to help her despite, you know, her drifting, you know, in and out of his life too.
Right.
He was coming to see her in Cleveland in this homeless shelter. He's going to give her money to borrow to get a place to rent. Mm-hmm. Walks from this homeless shelter. It's a really weird story. My grandpa's 81 years old, and I would have thought he was crazy if he hadn't told me how he found out about it. He walks in. He has his Gloria Smith there, which is my mom, mm-hmm. and the lady says, yeah, go down this hallway. Her room is after the Coke machine on your right side. And my grandpa says he walks down this hallway, and as he's walking down, my mom comes out behind the Coke machine. She waves to him, has a big smile on her face, and then she walks back into this room. So as my grandpa continues walking down the hallway, some lady that worked at the homeless shelter walks up to him and goes, he hands him a picture of my mom and says, is this your daughter? And he goes, yeah. And then he goes, yeah, she passed away yesterday. And my grandpa was like, no, I just saw her at the end of the hallway. And
wow.
And she said, no, she died yesterday. They found her, you know, face down, you know, in her bed. And she was only 49 years old. So it was, wow. You know, I got the call on July 5th. It was the day after, obviously, that she had died. And it was really, really weird because I kind of always expected it to end that way, but I didn't expect it so soon, you know.
Yeah.
9 years old. It was very hard for that, you know, that first 24 hours because it was like I cried for like probably an hour. And it wasn't so much because, you know, I had lost my mom. It was more because, you know, she never got to realize, you know, the three beautiful boys that she gave birth to. She never got to realize, you know, how good she had it and what a great chance she had to get to know us, and she never got the chance to be the mom that she could have been. So it was just you know, it was an all-around sad event, but you know, like every other thing in my life, or you know, anybody's life in general, you know, you can't let bad things keep you down for too long, because if you do, you know, it's just gonna eat away at you, and it's never gonna get better. You gotta find ways to realize that everything, I guess, as generic it sounds, everything happens for a reason, and mm-hmm. You know, the events we go through in our lives just make us stronger. And you know, it sucked. You know, that later that week I had a wrestling show in downtown Cleveland, mm-hmm. at the Vans Warped Tour. It was the same day I was supposed to you know, be a pallbearer for my mom's funeral. I, you know, buried her that afternoon, and then I went downtown and I wrestled because I wanted to keep my mind off of everything. And I wrestled in front of a couple hundred people who didn't care anything about wrestling because it was a concert.
Right.
And then I went home. And you know, every month, that's what I try to do, whether it's Chikara or anywhere else. You know, I just I leave my heart in the ring, and you know, despite all the bad things that I went through in my life, you know, wrestling's always kept me grounded. Wrestling's always kept me focused and helped me realize, you know, that, you know, with my story and with my passion for wrestling, like, that's my way to show people that anything's possible. That's my way to show people that, you know, whatever you go through in life, there is hope. You can overcome if you truly love and care about something. And I don't care and love anything more than I do professionally.
Well, all right. I mean, no, I mean, it's what's very heartwarming to hear is, you know, the perspective that you've taken on it, considering the, you know, the tragedy of how it all has happened. I've been dealing with my own sort of issues as it comes to family. I haven't talked to my dad in about 5 years. And nowhere near the reason because of, you know, like a situation you went through. I only just recently looked him up to see if he was still alive, just because, you know, I hadn't talked to him. I didn't know. And no one else in my family talks to him. He kind of just, I mean, he took off when I was well into my 20s. Like, he, you know, divorced my mom and everything like that. And, but yeah, we hadn't talked. And it is kind of scary when you're trying to find out whether or not someone's still around. And then kind of what do you do from that point? And how do you even, you know, deal with that? How do you even approach that situation to talk with them again or try to make that connection? And that's something I've been dealing with right now. But wow, that's the positivity that you put out is definitely I'd say sometimes the better way to deal with it compared to, I think, the anger that I've held on to and that I've let just kind of sit there that I'm trying to deal with, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, I wasn't always like, you know, optimistic, you know, overcome all odds, Gregory Iron, you know, as a kid, you know, not only because of my mom and my dad's relationship, but with, you know, with the disability, with cerebral palsy, right. You know, it affects the whole right side of my body, most noticeably in my arm and hand. You know, it's always been a challenge, and there's always been wonderment, I guess, of, you know, why was I made like this? I remember, you know, because of my grandma, she always instilled in me that I should pray every night and all that good stuff. And, every night when I'd go to bed, it was like, you know, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I should die before I wake, pray the Lord my soul to take. And then after that, I would always say to myself, you know, please let things for my parents get better. And, you know, please let my hand get better.
Mm.
Amen. And, you know, it was rough to have that moment where it was like, you know, well, mom and dad are still arguing all the time and things aren't getting better there. And, you know, eventually when I was about 11 or 12, there came a point where I had to go to the doctor. The doctor pretty much told me, you know, there's no cure for cerebral palsy. It's your brain. You know, your brain affects the right side of your body. That's why it's not working properly. And there's nothing that's ever going to change that. So, you know, once you get hit with something like that and you realize that, you know, sometimes there's stuff that can't be fixed. It's rough. And, I did have a lot of pent up anger and frustration. And, you know, I've said it a bunch of times in the past, you know, I can't tell you at what moment I woke up and I went, wow, I need to figure out, you know, how to make everything better. You know, I can't point it out, but at some point I realized I got two choices. Either, you know, I let this keep me down for the rest of my life and I stay depressed about, you know, a situation I can't control, or I figure out a way to make the best of it. And, you know, what better way than professional wrestling? I never thought that I could do it. I always thought, you know, maybe I could be a writer and an announcer. I love wrestling and I knew I always wanted to be a part of it somehow. But I never thought I could be a wrestler until I saw Zach Gowen, who, you know, wrestled with one WWE. And when he did that moonsault off top rope, it kind of got put into my brain that maybe it's possible. And I started working out at 16. And it's weird because as you progress in wrestling, I don't know if I understood who Gregory Iron was, but I always knew that I wanted to put that handicap symbol on my gear because I wanted people to look at that and because it's distinguishable. You know, people see that and they understand what that means, but I think they have a wrong understanding of what that means. You know, being disabled doesn't mean that you're weak or you can't do anything. It means, to me, it means like, you know, that's the way you're perceived, but now I'm going to change everything you think. I'm not, I'm strong. Whether if it's not physically, mentally, I'm strong. Emotionally, I'm strong. You know, having a disability doesn't mean it's the end. Having a disability, I guess, maybe, you know, could be the beginning, you know, and it wasn't until I realized that, having this disability was actually a blessing rather than a curse that things began to change for me. And you know, wrestling was the perfect outlet to show people, like, you know, having a disability hasn't stopped me from pursuing the thing that I love more than anything. Mm-hmm. Why should your disability stop you?
Was, when you first started training, what was kind of the, the reaction from your trainers? Was there a concern in terms of, you know, what you're with your disability and everything like that and how to proceed from there? Or did they simply ignore it and say, you want to be a wrestler, you're going to be a wrestler?
I think there was kind of concerns on both ends. I mean, in retrospect, I didn't know really what I was getting into other than a lot of pain. You know, mm-hmm. I had read a bunch of books about wrestling for years and how, you know, when you start training, it's not easy and it hurts, and all that was true. I remember my trainers, you know, basically were like, you know, here's some basic wrestling holds and stuff. If you can't do these, then I can't continue to train you as a wrestler. Here's, you know, here's how you, you know, here's the proper way to hit the ropes and stuff like that. And if you can't do that, if you can't hit the ropes like everyone else, like, you can't be a wrestler. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever was put in front of me, if I couldn't do it the way that, you know, you're supposed to do it, I would figure out another way to do it. Or I would figure out, you know, okay, this is what I'm not so good at. This is what I am good at. So I'm not going to do that because that's not good. And I'm going to focus more on this. And once I figured out, you know, what my strengths and my weaknesses were, not just as a wrestler, but as, I guess, as an athletic person, because mm-hmm. I never did anything athletic before wrestling, honestly. I was kind of into baseball, like watching it. I was kind of into football as a kid, but I never pursued sports. I never wanted to join the football team at school or play basketball. I was just, you know, I was just Greg. I was a socially awkward kid who, you know, kind of sort of fit into every circle in high school, but didn't know really where I belonged. Right. It wasn't until I started training as a wrestler and figuring out that, you know, this was something that I might be able to do, that I finally felt like I belonged somewhere. As weird as that sounds, like, it wasn't until I was becoming a wrestler that I realized this is what I was meant to do. I started to think that, you know, the reason why I was given this disability was so I could pursue this dream of wrestling, so I could tell other people about the hardships that I've went through, so they could look at my story and go, wow, if you could do this, you know, I can overcome this. Or if you've gone through this, maybe what I'm going through right now isn't that difficult to overcome. You know, I feel like this was all given to me for a reason, and that's why I keep trying as hard as I can to succeed in professional wrestling.
All right. Well, I mean, wrestling definitely is it's a land of misfit toys, and not, you know, not passing judgments on anybody involved any way, one which way or the other, but there's a different breed and a different mentality when it comes to wrestling, because of the nature of what you're doing, not only the physicality of the sport itself, but, you know, the challenge of moving up the ranks and getting your name out there. And there's not a set path like there is, say, you know, you play JV football, and then you make varsity, and then you might go to a great college and get looked at by a scout, something like that. There's no set path that way. Like, everybody kind of has to find their way as they go. So you do have to be a pretty self-assured individual to make your way through this crazy world of wrestling.
Yeah, you have to be tough both physically and mentally, because if you're not, you won't last very long.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you said your grandma introduced you to wrestling. Was it the WWF that you grew up with, or was she an NWA fan?
You know what? I think she liked a little bit of both, but for the most part, we watched a lot of WWF. Like, I think I started watching in the tail end of the 80s, you know, like 89, but like my first memories are like, 1990, 1991. Mm-hmm. One of the most distinct memories, you know, she was a big Hulk Hogan fan, so that kind of rubbed off on me. I remember when, do you remember when Hulk Hogan got injured by Earthquake?
Absolutely.
Okay, leading up to SummerSlam 1990, I remember I was devastated by that. And they had that Get Well Hulk Right In campaign.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember my grandma wrote in the Hulk Hogan and the WWF for me, and I was like, I don't know how many people out there actually did this, but I, you know, my grandma wrote in the Hulk Hogan for me. The WWF actually sent postcards back, and I wish I could find this because I distinctly remember my grandma getting a postcard back in the mail from the WWF with a picture of Hulk Hogan on the front, and it had like some generic message that they probably sent to thousands of people who wrote in that said like, thanks for your support and I'll be back at SummerSlam and blah, blah, blah. As a kid who was like 4 years old, mm-hmm. I legitimately thought Hulk Hogan had written me back personally on this postcard, and I freaked out. I couldn't believe it. But like that's how much of a diehard my grandma was. She ordered all the pay-per-views. She recorded them for me. She always made two copies because there was a replay, so there'd be one at my house and one at her house, but mm-hmm. folks, so I could watch there and she could watch it whenever she wanted. She was very into wrestling, and you know, I think after she passed, I think that was one of the reasons why I latched onto it, because I always felt like it was a strong bond that I held between me and her. Even as a kid, it's real weird. I mean, I've had some concussions because of wrestling, so like my memory in recent years isn't as good as it probably should be. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, I can remember stuff, you know, at a very young age, probably that I should really be able to remember. I'm talking like being in diapers and stuff. I don't know if that's odd, but from talking to other people, like not a lot of people remember being in diapers, and I don't know. It's real strange, but I remember my grandma was a very kind-hearted and sweet woman, and you know, I guess somewhere out there she must be watching over me, and I hope she's proud to see how far I've come in the pursuit of my dream.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure she is. I mean, I think we've all had that. We all kind of have those fond memories of that person that introduced us to wrestling. And it's usually a family member and things like that. And yeah, she wasn't like a slipper throwing individual at the screen, like people like to talk about that old stereotype, was she?
No. She kind of hooted and hollered a little bit, I guess you could say. And,
all right.
More so, she made a bigger scene when she would watch football. Being from Cleveland, she was a big Cleveland Browns fan. Mm. Like most Clevelanders, kind of don't give up on the hope that we'll actually get to a Super Bowl, which, let me set the record straight, the chances of them actually getting the Super Bowl while I'm still alive, probably not that good. Look, I'm not trying to turn on the Cleveland fans, but listen, I don't know why you're still trying to have this belief in the Cleveland Browns, okay? They haven't been good in a very long time. But anyways, she would always do like a touchdown dance when the Cleveland Browns would get a touchdown. It was pretty ridiculous. I wish I could show you what it looked like, but I can't do it obviously via the conversation right now. But if you ever see me in person, I'll do the Greg Irons grandma touchdown dance for you. Okay.
I'm gonna remember that because I need to see that now. Can you give us even a minor description that we might be able to see in our mind's eye?
Hands in the air, very awkward looking leg movements, lots of yelling. That's pretty much all I can give you. I'm pretty sure I can imitate it just because I'm not good at dancing, but I will attempt to dance and it doesn't come off very well. So
fair enough. Fair enough. Dancing is it's in the eye of the beholder. That's what I say. I tend to describe myself as I'm kind of like Gumby in a strong wind, and I just kind of flail around. So you know, it's some people giggle and laugh at it, other people deride it, but whatever. It's kind of foolish. So. At a risk of bringing this down again, you brought up a very interesting issue that's, you know, definitely on the, you know, that people have talked about in wrestling a lot, and that's the concussions. And it just occurred to me as you mentioned with how cerebral palsy works and that, you know, where it does affect things in the brain.
Yeah.
Are the concussions more of a concern for you in terms of, is that something that you think about as you move through your career?
You know what? It doesn't make me at greater risk for concussions or anything like that. You know, if anything else, like the bigger thing that I always have to worry about is I'm not a very big guy. I'm only 5'4". Mm-hmm. I weigh about 160 pounds. I'd like to think that like some of the bigger guys don't understand their own strengths sometimes. And I think a lot of us smaller individuals kind of are probably more at risk just because of that. You know, the cerebral palsy has no bearing on it. The fact that I'm not, you know, over 6 foot tall and 200 pounds. I think that's my biggest setback as far as I've only had one major concussion back in 2007. Other than that, and I'm sure this goes for probably any wrestler you'll talk to, I've probably had dozens of minor concussions that I don't even realize, which is, it's not something I would like to think about, but I'm sure it's happened, more times than I'd care to know.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. All right. Away from these sad topics.
Yes. Go cry after this podcast.
I know, okay, but it's very cathartic that way. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. I recently had a good cry just this weekend. I was a big fan of Archie comics growing up, and okay. I just read there was a whole series they've been doing, and they did a collection of it where Archie had finally decided who he was going to marry, and they kind of looked at the two different paths if he married Betty or Veronica, and in one of them. One of the teachers that he had had for, you know, the 70 years he's been in high school, Miss Grundy, passed away from a terminal illness.
Oh,
yeah, I know, like heavy. And I'm reading this and tears coming down my cheeks as they're describing, you know, what she meant to them and all that stuff. And it kind of weird realizing that this fictional character has been with me for such a long period of time. That it was able to bring such a well of emotion out of me. It's very surprising. So I'm sure.
You know, it's not really surprising. I mean, it's like, you know, some people won't admit, like, you know, what really, you know, brings the tears out of them. I mean, like, it's well documented. If anybody's ever watched a Gregory Iron match, especially in the last at least year, I've cried probably three times in a wrestling ring in front of, you know, a couple hundred people. Mm-hmm. I'm a big pansy. Sometimes I watch movies and TV shows, and I'll be watching it with a friend or another wrestler, and I'll have to fight it, man. I'll have to fight it back. Like, mm-hmm. It won't even be something that emotional. Like, I don't know. Like, sometimes I act like a real tough guy, in real life, not wrestling life. In wrestling life, you know, I'm this inspiration, but in real life, I'm a big pansy, man. Right.
Is there one thing that gets you more than anything else? For me, it's anything that has to do with animals, like being hurt or like in pain or in danger or something like that. It really bothers me. I can't watch it at all.
Well, I think the one thing off the top of my head that really bothers me is because I guess in a way that I was one of those kids once. Anytime I see like a kid with a really bad disability or some sort of, scars or something. And one thing that pops in my mind, and this wasn't even like a real life scenario, but it really, it struck a chord with me for whatever reason. If you ever seen the movie, Shallow Hal, you know, the whole movie, you know, it's kind of this lighthearted movie. Okay. Like he sees this, like overweight girl and thinks she's skinny and falls in love with her. But the thing that like hit hard with me when I'm watching it, you know, he had talked to those kids earlier in the movie, and then you're to find out once he's not shallow anymore, he sees that these kids are like burn victims, and it was like an unexpected part in the movie, and like he was like shocked by it because now he sees that these same kids that he talked to earlier, who he thought was perfectly fine, now they're horribly disfigured. And I remember like I was like, oh wow, like this is it was some emotional stuff, man. But like that, and like I don't know, like. I don't know. That's one thing that comes to mind. It's
sure.
Hard to watch that movie just because of that one part. I don't know. I'm not that.
We'll leave it at that. Yeah. Yeah. The movie that got me recently, my girlfriend and I both watched it. It was a movie called, it didn't have a big release or anything. It was called Hachiko. Okay. And it's actually based off of a true story, from Japan where there was there was like a university professor there, and he had his Akita, Hachiko, a breed of dog. And every morning, the dog would walk with him to the train station while he took a train to Tokyo to go teach. And when he came back at the train, the dog met him at the train station and went home with them.
Yeah.
Well, one day the teacher went to school in the morning, passed away while at the university. Every single day for the next 9 years, the dog returned to the train station at the time the train was supposed to come back, waiting for his master to return. Oh God. The way they did it in this movie, the dog actors were so amazing, especially towards the end as the dog is getting older and things like that. My girlfriend and I, we were a mess.
I can imagine.
By the end of that movie. And it's such a beautiful, touching story. But so sad at the same time too. And I believe in Japan, there's actually like a statue of the dog at the train station, still to this day. It's this beautiful symbol of loyalty and love that, that people kind of cling to and congregate around.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez. Have you done anything fun lately, Greg, so that we can get away from this? Oh, my God.
Wow. Fun things that I've done lately. Oh, gosh.
even just a good joke.
Yeah. You know what? I'd like to think that I'm a pretty fun guy. I've gone to a couple local concerts. I enjoy concerts. That's probably the funnest thing that I've done outside of my routine. I do a lot of wrestling related stuff, like, you know, lifting and cardio. And I don't like to admit this, but I have to go tanning. You know, I'm a pretty pale guy. so I have to go tanning. So I got to get my wrestler tan on.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much stick into the same routine of stuff. I write stuff. I don't really do much other than concerts and or like, you know, hang out with friends. I don't know if I'm cool or just really plain. I don't know.
What do you write? What do you specifically?
I mean, it just depends on the mood. I mean, like I like writing short stories.
Really?
I used to like, you know, poetry. I don't do that so much anymore. I don't know. Like I've always really been into writing. Ever since I was a kid, you know, I would be the kid who was work and drama and writing stories. I'd be in a class and I'd get done with all my stuff early so I can go in the corner of the room and, draw pictures and, write like short novels. And I'm talking like second grade. I'm writing novels, not short stories, but like I'd have whole notebooks full of novels that I would just write, like just fantasy novels I would make up. I had an active imagination.
nothing wrong with that. So nowadays, is there like a specific genre that you look at that you write in, or just kind of ideas that pop in your head and you just kind of see where they go?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on my mood, man. Mm-hmm. Just wherever my imagination takes me, and I like to think that that helps me in pro wrestling. Again, everything comes back to pro wrestling.
Absolutely,
that's where all my. All of my creative energy usually is geared towards.
Okay. All right. I'm hoping that as a kid, at times you were, you were a promoter of your own group with whatever toys you had available at the time.
Yeah. You know what? I was a horrible promoter because, I was a big Hulk Hogan fan. Hulk Hogan went over a lot of times. Hulk Hogan won a lot of times. A lot of times my promotion. Actually, it got to the point where I had to keep Hulk Hogan off the shows because if I kept him on the shows, he was going to win the Royal Rumble. He was going to win the title. I had to keep him off the shows because, you know, some other guys have to win sometimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. everybody wants to win. It's a beautiful thing when you win. Like we've already said, I want to go sit down and cry now.
maybe we should talk about some Chikara.
Absolutely. That is a beautiful idea. There's nothing sad happens at Chikara. Stan Bush was there, for God's sake. Chikara obviously has, you know, its own amazing benefits and things like that. What's been the best thing about Chikara for you?
Just getting the opportunity in Chikara as a full-time roster member is really powerful. It means a lot to me because a lot of the wrestlers you've seen come through Chikara have been because of the Chikara Wrestle Factory, and
right.
I think I'm pretty sure I'm one of you know, maybe two or three guys on the full-time roster who you know, was trained elsewhere. And just the fact that I've worked hard enough through the last 5 years of my career just to get an opportunity in such a great promotion like Chikara means so much to me. It was always one of those goals of mine to get to Chikara. I never was sure if I'd get that chance. I got to wrestle with some of the Chikara guys back in 2008, about 2 years into my career. I was in a match with guys like Mike Quackenbush and Vin Gerard and a couple other individuals. And I had a really great time wrestling them. And I was hoping that I would get a spot on Chikara somewhere down the line. And that opportunity came in 2010 for the Young Lions Cup. I was a last-minute replacement for a guy who got injured or couldn't make his flight or something. And I got to wrestle Lince Dorado. And even though he is a despicable individual, I'd like to think I had probably one of my best and most favorite matches to this day. You know, I came out to the ring in front of those Chikara fans, and I think like one guy knew who I was because he said, "Cleveland loves you, Greg." And I said, "Okay, one guy knows who I am. But besides that, it was complete and utter silence. And I was like, "Oh God, this is going to be horrible." And, you know, we did a short interview segment in the ring, and, you know, Lince Dorado was making my disability. And I told him, "Lince, you know, you want to make fun of my disability? I think you might be the one that will be disabled after this match." And I hit him with a couple punches in the face, and immediately the crowd was behind me, and all of a sudden I had all the confidence I needed. And we went about 10 or 12 minutes. Lince won the match, but afterwards it was an emotional moment. I'm surprised I didn't cry during it. It was so but I stood to my feet, and the crowd stood with me, and nice. They gave me a standing ovation. And I'll never forget that because, you know, again, I had always wondered if I ever got the chance to be in Chikara, would I be able to hang with some of the guys? And the fact that, you know, my first time there, and, you know, a few times after that, you know, for the longest time, every time I came there and wrestled, I would get a standing ovation. And, you know, it was a very powerful and very great feeling to know that, you know, here's one of my wrestling goals. And I, not only did I get to do it, but I succeeded at it. And that, right. I can't even put into words what that meant to me, man. I'm just lucky enough to had a good showing my first time around, and I kept getting asked back and loving every single minute of it.
And you got kind of singled out rather quickly by the notorious Icarus. He has previously had breakfast with me, and I mean, we've heard Icarus's words and his thoughts and opinions on your disability and what that means. I mean, considering such a senior roster member immediately targeted you, I mean, how did you deal with that? It's kind of intimidating.
You know what? I'm used to guys targeting me because I'm smaller, or they perceive me as weak, or because I'm disabled. I don't know why I stuttered on my words. What am I doing? But I think it was really weird to not only have Icarus make fun of my disability, but to accuse me of faking my disability.
It's a unique taunt, I would say.
Yeah, because I you know what? It's funny because there have been people that I know who have sometimes thought that my asked me if my disability was real, and I always thought that was kind of strange because why would I walk around with my hand all crooked and deformed looking on a regular basis? I don't know why I would purposely do that.
Right.
But you know, when Icarus did it in the context of professional wrestling, really, really angered me because here's a guy who already steps on a lot of people's toes. Already messes with a lot of people, or gets under the skin of not only, you know, probably the whole roster and secretly probably Chuck Taylor and Johnny Gargano. I don't know how they put up with him, but now he's calling me out on my disability. And I wanted to prove to Icarus that, you know, it's not something I'm faking. I was born with this. And you know what? You want to make fun of my disability, Icarus? I'm going to come out here and I'm going to beat you too. So not only accuse me of faking it all you want, but the bottom line is, I'm going to beat you. And guess what I did? I went out and I beat him. And then that ate away at Icarus' soul. And by the way, for anybody out there who's interested in getting a tattoo, do not go to Icarus for advice. For the love of God.
It's an amazing piece of artwork that has expanded over the years that adorns his back. This is true.
Yeah. I don't want to go to the guy that Icarus has gone to. I don't have any plans to get tattoos, but I don't think I want a blind man doing artwork.
Oof. All right. Choice words there for Icarus. All right. Is there anyone on the roster that, I mean, I say this not out of some arrogance or anything like that, or just assumed belief, maybe besides Mike Quackenbush that you'd like to test your skills against?
Wow. You know, I got some things to say to Gran Akuma pretty soon, and I don't want to delve too much into that, but, you know, he did kind of strike me with a kick at the pay-per-view, and let's just say in the near future, I'm going to make it very well known what my intentions are with him, and I'm going to definitely fix the whole situation.
Ah, mystery and intrigue. Fascinating. All right. Well, actually, I think on that mysterious and intriguing note, we will end this breakfast. But before we do that, let's make sure we do the appropriate business plugs. They must be done. Upcoming, yep. Chikara is invading the Great White North, that amazing nation of Canada, and I believe you will be there.
I will be there. I'll be there. Will you be there?
Possibly. I don't know. I'm erring to the side of unfortunately not. I'm already a foreigner to start with. I don't know how many countries I can bump my way into. So
you're gonna miss out.
Yeah, unfortunately, I am gonna miss out. I know the plans there are quite grand. So and you'll be there. And there's no reason not to be there if you're gonna be there.
I will definitely be there. I'll be doing my thing in the ring, Daddy.
All right. And you're for both adventures that they're having up there, you will be there?
Yes. Okay. I'll be there the whole weekend.
All right. Fantastic. Fantastic. If people wanted to profess some sort of love for you, possibly going the route of Icarus, calling you out for what they perceive to be lies and fraudulentness, is there a way that people can get in touch with you?
Yes, I am available on the Bookface, or as others might call it, the Facebook, at facebook.com/thehandicappedhero, or you can find me on Twitter at Gregory Iron, and I try to answer as many messages as I can, any tweets, try to respond to. I'm just a down-to-earth guy. I like to talk about things. Anybody need advice or just need someone to talk to, Gregory Iron is always there. He's a good guy, and he likes to be approachable. Because, you know, I was a fan once. I wanted to talk to my favorite wrestlers and see what they were like. Nobody should be afraid to come up to me because I'm just a dude.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. You have been a very down to earth interview, Greg, and it has been much appreciated. I myself, PJ Drummond, I can also be reached on Twitter at Bermuda Ref. Please give me any feedback you have about these conversations I've been having. I would love to hear it. And also, if you would like to see any of Greg's adventures in Chikara or the Young Lions Cup, as he mentioned, his debut in Chikara, any of his other great battles, smartmarkvideo.com is your source for all your Chikara needs. And I do believe now they have rocketed themselves further into the future, and you can download whole shows from smartmarkvideo.com. You do not need to order a DVD unless you want to. So you have many options to view Chikara and, of course, Mr. Gregory Iron.
Yes. Do they sell VHS tapes?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised, knowing the Smart Mark video crew, that they don't have some VHS tapes just stocked up there with some show that happened one time in the wilds of Pennsylvania that probably has some sort of amazingness on it in some way, shape, or form.
Good, because I'm planning on getting a VCR pretty soon. I still have a beta.
Oh, beta was great.
Yeah, really behind the times.
You know, it's not about being behind the times. It's about simpler times.
Right.
Yes.
Hopefully in the near future, I'm going to be up to speed. I'm going to have technology from around 1980.
Perfect. Perfect. You'll be good to go then. Power suits for Gregory Iron. That's what it's – power suits and power ties. That's what it's going to be about for Gregory Iron.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, Greg, once again, thank you so much for being here. And everyone else, thank you for listening.